This is a Christian Science Extemporaneous Prayer Treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org. The title to this prayer treatment is Man, Perfect Idea of God, the Only Source of Man. Mary Baker Eddy is the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science. Jesus is the way shower. He showed us that every belief of matter and so-called mortal can be overcome. He healed everything he was confronted with in walking through the paths of the areas that he visited, came upon different individuals with a variety of problems, sin, sickness, disease, and death. He proved that none of them had any validity, and he proved it by healing it. He proved it by seeing the individual as the perfect idea, image of God. He knew that God was perfect, not a flaw. He didn't teach how he did his healings, but his example is what needs to be studied in order to find out. He lived a life of giving. Everything he did was giving. He asked for nothing in return. Sometimes before he would heal someone, he would ask them if they believed that they could be healed. He was making sure that they had an open thought. Because he visited Galilee at the beginning of his ministry, because that was the area where he experienced a material sense of life and childhood and young adulthood up to the age of 30. But he found that they were not receptive to being healed by him because they didn't think that he was different than anyone else. They did not think that he had any mission. They didn't think he had any power or reflect any power from God that would give him the needed requirements to overcome the beliefs. So he left. He went to areas where they didn't already have a preconceived notion about who he was as a child or as a young man. But he didn't let it bother him. He kept on giving. He didn't give for the purpose of receiving anything. He was giving to prove that there was only one God. Mary Baker Eddy has given us some very specific definitions about what God is. She provided us the textbook entitled Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, as well as 16 other books. And she said understanding these other books will better enable one to understand the textbook. She studied the textbook and her other writings herself because she made the very specific statement that she was not the author, but only a scribe under the orders of God. Her final edition of Science and Health, she did not copyright, because she said it came from God, and that it was open for further explanation and understanding that could be written about by those who we're doing it honestly and with the right motive. She gave us a system, which is mentioned on page 146, whereby she says, divine metaphysics has now been reduced to a system. And on page 330, she says, there are 32 planks to the platform of the system. And then when we understand both the letter and the spirit accomplished, when we are witness to them with the way we think, say, and do, then the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. In other words, any problem will be resolved, or maybe dissolved is a better word, because once we understand the unreality of something, it melts away as being a problem. The essence of Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics, which all means the same thing, is the first commandment, as Jesus stated when he was asked by a Pharisee, what is the greatest commandment of all? And he said, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it, love your neighbor as yourself. The Bible tells us that we cannot love the invisible without loving the visible. In other words, we need to love our neighbor as ourselves if we want to love God, because they go together. You can't do one without the other. They are permanently attached, center and circumference, unlimited. The Bible says we should tithe. What is your concept of tithing? The dictionary says it means a tenth part. A tenth part of what? And should everybody be tithing the same 10%? Are you a C student when you take any educational courses? Are you living a C life? Just an average life, where you're basically following the leader, whomever you think the leader is. If you're an athlete, you may think the leader is your coach. If you're a homemaker, you may think that you need to look to what the needs are of each member of your family to be fulfilling your duty. Every really outstanding, successful individual in any walk of life had to come to the conclusion that they had to give service. If they didn't serve their customer, if they were in business, or if they didn't serve their family, if they had a family, if they didn't serve their wife, as she needed to be served, any friend, any relationship, any activity, then they would be separated, if not physically, mentally. And then the unification would be gone. When Jesus approached a blind man who had been blind from his birth, his disciples asked him, who did sin, this man or his parents? Jesus said, neither. And the reason that we have this opportunity to be involved in healing this man is to glorify God. That is the opportunity we have all day long with every moment in our life. No, there should never be any such thing as an average, a C student. A C teacher. if we're not going to excel for perfection, not compared to anyone else, compared to the principle of what we're doing. If we're not going to excel as being a perfect example of what we are involved in, if we're not going to be a lighthouse where we can silently let our light shine to reflect the good activity out into the universe of thought, then we should cease that activity. But if we're interested in the activity, we should learn everything there is to know about it at the moment, at our present level of understanding. If we're interested in a hobby or an extra activity, one might enjoy walking or running or tennis or golf, mountain climbing. It doesn't matter what it is. You should take lessons from someone that knows more than you do about it, and hopefully the best you can find, continuously, persistently, and consistently the rest of the time that you are involved. If somebody wants to be involved in piano music, playing it, they should take piano lessons consistently, as long as they're playing the piano. Professional pianists exercise the scales daily. There's a company called Hannon that published exercises, and one will tell you, if they're a professional, that yes, they practice the Hannon exercises every day. If we want to make the most use of our time, do you think it would be beneficial to study time management? If you want to learn anything by reading, do you think you should be proficient at reading or just a C student? Do you want to remember what you read? We tell you how you can do that. We have a presentation on how to heal effectively, and it includes these ideas of time management, goal management, schedule management, priority management, having a balance in your life, having a discipline. Mary Baker Eddy says that she makes strong demands on love. She uses the phrase divine principle love several times in her writing. Principle represents structure, balance, and harmony. Mind is a symbol of things such as creative ability and force. Creative force, in other words, power with the creativity, faculty, facility, functionality, performance, power, science, action. The definition of God that was noted previously includes these words from page 465. That's a chapter entitled Recapitulation in the textbook. It's a summary of chapters 1 through 13. God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. Spirit means substance. Spirit is the opposite of matter. Matter is temporary. It's a misconception of substance. But spirit is its total purity. Therefore, it's flawless. is transparent. And as a result, it's reflective. Soul are the five senses on how we identify things. Seeing, hearing, feeling, smell, and taste. But since spirit is the only substance, those qualities, those five senses, are all spiritual, not material. Every time you look at something, you should judge it. Is this spiritual, or is it something trying to deceive me as being real, but it's based out of matter? John, the disciple of Jesus, asked Jesus one time, is there a material body? And after Jesus gave him the answer, he said, is there a material universe? We have a short presentation on the website of that discussion. You're encouraged to check it out. It's in the menu. Is there? If spirit is the only substance, could there be a material body? If spirit is the only substance, could there be a material anything, including the entire universe? One of the very predominant features of evil is deceit, deception, decoys. They're all features of evil, which is the opposite of truth. Mary Baker Eddy gives us three introductory quotes to the textbook. The first one says, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Those are words of Jesus presented by John. The second one is, there is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. That's from Shakespeare. Another way to say it is that what we see is what we are, and what we are is what we see. And that could apply to all five senses. What we hear is what we are. What we are is what we hear. There was a TV show, I saw a couple episodes of it, and they would select a married couple, well, several of them maybe. I just noticed one, watched it just a few minutes, and the man was very good looking, had a good physique, stood straight, accurate, precise in the way he spoke, with good grammar, seemed to be full of energy, and the wife was plump. She wasn't dressed very well, her hair wasn't very well kept, and she was on television. You would expect maybe she would look her very best. And the combination of being overweight and being kind of sloppy, she didn't put forth a very good appearance. So they put her in, after introducing them both to the audience, there was a live audience during the filming of the show, and then they separated them and they put the wife in a soundproof room where she could not hear anything outside. And then they talked to the husband, the host, asked him a couple of questions. What do you think of your wife? He said, don't be concerned, she can't hear anything. Please be honest with the audience. He said, I love her very much. She's the most beautiful woman, the most perfect wife, and perfect mother to our children that there could ever be. The audience couldn't figure out why he would say such wonderful things about his wife. And the host asked him, why do you say this? He said, she gets out of bed in the morning for the kids. She prepares breakfast, She prepares lunches for all of us to take. She keeps the house spotless. She regularly does the laundry. She's a fine cook, delicious food. She's very methodical in having it ready at a good time where we're all going to be expecting it and enjoy it. She helps the kids with their homework. She participates in the parent-teacher association meetings. She goes to their activities, after-school activities, and roots for them if it's a sport activity. She's a perfect mother. She nurtures them as they need it at their different grades in school and so forth. She teaches them so that when they become an adult, they will be good adults. She teaches them the value of honesty. They say a prayer together, which sometimes is before I get home. I couldn't ask for a better wife or for her to be a better mother or a better individual to be, you know, to do her part. Everything that she saw, that he saw in his wife, as a wife and a mother, and so forth, was based on qualities, not on physical appearance, and he appreciated it. And when they put him in a room and had her out there, she said the same kind of things about him. Said he works hard every day. When he comes home, he's tired. He provides good for the family by the money that he earns where he works. He does everything to support the family. He's a wonderful husband. You couldn't ask any more than what he gives. They were both judging each other by what they give, not what they look like. Although he was very pleasant to look at, the judgment, their evaluation, was the qualities that they lived in their life and the contributions they made to their relationship with the family. What do we see when we look at someone? Maybe walking down the street. If we see someone that is homeless and they are holding out a cup for a donation, maybe everything they own is right there where they are, a sleeping bag, and they're sitting on it, and they sleep on the concrete sidewalk at night, no pillow, maybe everything they own. Do we do anything about it? Tithing isn't giving money. It is giving everything. Yes, it probably includes money. But also, the most important is caring about the individual. See if you can find out graciously what their problem is. Why do they have the problem? How did the problem occur? If we do it in a very genuine, non-invasive way, we may be able to help solve that problem for that individual. And we may cultivate a friend for life. Some of those people have been very successful in the past and may have gone astray and did something very evil and got caught and everything they had was taken away. Or they may be someone that is totally innocent and didn't do anything that put them in the position they're in. We don't know what the situation is unless we care enough to see if we can be of value in some way to solve the problem. The title is Man, Perfect Idea of God, the Only Source of Man. Are we letting God be the source of our thinking? The second definition of God that I wanted to recite that came to me is on page 587 in the glossary, chapter 17 of the 18 chapters. And it says that God is the great I Am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love. All substance, intelligence. The same seven synonymous terms, a little bit different order, but an emphasis on some of the different features of God. The great I Am. Have you ever looked up the word great? If you check it out, you'll find that it's not likely what you thought it was. People use that word commonly. It's not a common word. It's a word intended to be used for one specific thing. You'll be surprised. Check it out. How about the words I Am? Do you ever say, I am this, I am that, I am whatever? It's commonly used all the time. It could be for something good or it could be for something bad. It could be for something that is perfect or something that is rotten. It could be something that's very much a godlike activity or a godlike quality, or it could be the opposite. The Bible says, God speaking to Moses, I am that I am. If you look up the definition of I am in the glossary, chapter 17, you'll find that you're going to be a lot more careful if you really want to advance in your spiritual nature, that you're going to be a lot more judicious in the way you use those two words of I Am. So the great I Am, all-knowing. If we want to know something, what do you think our source should be? Are we going to look in a book that was written by a human, so-called? If we're stumped and we don't know what to do, how about checking out the all-knowing God? All-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal. And then at the end it says all-substance, intelligent. Those seven synonymous terms for God, if one would use a worksheet or a spreadsheet, you could call it a matrix that has rows and columns. And if you would write those seven terms for God in the top row from left to right, as it is stated in Genesis chapter 1, or as spiritually translated by Mary Baker Eddy, as being mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, and then down the left side in the first column, do the same thing. Mind being in the very top left corner, and go down the second row would have the name spirit, and then soul, principle, life, truth, and love. This is all on our home page, by the way, these definitions, mbeinstitute.org. And then think about what is a quality of mind. I mentioned many of them to you. Let's say you want to use the word intelligence. Do you want to be ignorant about anything you think, say, or do? Or do you want to be intelligent? Do you want to know what you're doing? Do you want to feel that what you're doing is the right thing? If you hear something, do you want to hear the truth? Or do you want to hear a lie? Maybe you have some prejudice about something and you want to hear support for your bias. The third quote at the beginning of the textbook says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." Does God have ears? He says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer." The very first chapter in the content of the textbook, after the preface and the introductory quotes, which is first and then the preface and then the table of contents, is chapter 1, and the title is Prayer. And it ends on page 16 and 17 with the Lord's Prayer with the spiritual interpretation. It's on the home page. If it's not there, because we continually update the home page, it's in the menu. It's on page 16 and 17. You can go to Mary Baker Eddy in the menu and go to the textbook and look on page 15 and 16, or 16 and 17. So there's 17 pages in the chapter on prayer. You probably will be very surprised, flabbergasted about the right, correct, effective way to pray. I'll give you a clue right now. You have to understand what God is. And you should read the definition of man. This is in the glossary, chapter 17. It's an alphabetical listing. So look up God and look up man. Because if you don't know what a good concept is, the perfect concept of what God is and what man is, how can you pray? You're going to pray about something that is a problem. So you're going to seek a power that has more authority than what you're using, or you wouldn't have the problem. And if you want to start at the top, it's God. And if you want to be talking about the highest image and likeness of God, it's you and me. It's man. Everyone. 8.3 billion of us just on planet Earth. And there's a lot of other planets up there. Who knows what kind of life there is up there? Prayer is the first chapter because that is the perfect place to begin if you want to understand your life and how to make it better. Now, if you don't, then you need to go somewhere else besides Christian Science and the system of divine metaphysics. If you think your life is perfect the way it is and you don't want to change a thing, then there's no use studying about how to improve it because you feel you're already where you want to be. You have to have a desire. That's the first step. If you want to have a change in your life, you have to have a desire to have a change. Something better than what you're experiencing in thought, speech, and action. And when you decide you want to and feel there is a better solution somehow, somewhere, to solve whatever problem it is, then it doesn't matter what it is. Christian Science has been around since 1866. And there have been millions and millions and millions of people that have stood up in church on a Wednesday evening, because they typically meet on Sunday and Wednesday. And Wednesday they include personal individual testimonies of healing by the members in the audience. And they stand up and they tell what their healing was about. And there's been millions of them. And they've been publishing the Christian Science Journal since 1883, and the Sentinel started a few years later. And in each one of them, they include healings that have been verified. Millions of them. Anything you can think of has been healed, including death. any kind of disease, any kind of sickness, any kind of sin, you name it. Over those years, what, 143 years? 1883 to 2026. This is, right now, is March 21, 2026. Mary Baker Eddy discovered it in 1866. Now, what do I mean discovered? Jesus gave us the example. He's the way shower. If we follow his path. And, of course, that's the primary thing of Christian Science. But what did Mary Baker Eddy give us? Jesus was anointed by God. He was a special messenger for civilization. And so was Mary Baker Eddy. She is prophesied in the Bible. The President of the United States was prophesied in the Bible. We're at a very special time in history. Right now. And he is our leader and has been since 2017. Yes, he was the president when someone else had the name of presidency who took over. He never got in the White House because it was locked and under guard when the president left in January of 2021 and reopened when he came back in January. But he has been officially the president for now 11 years, or what, 9 years, 9 years and 3 months. Yeah, he's always been the one in authority. He always had military that were reporting to him. He had the power to have people arrested, given military tribunals, given the penalty that was assessed by the people running the tribunal. That could be anywhere from jail time to execution. Many of the people that you think you see are clones or actors wearing a rubber suit that makes them look like the original. Or they're a CGI, computer graphic interface. It's a like a hologram. It's just a projection on a projection that makes it look real. So it's a combination of those three. The president, or the one that was acting as president, who was not even alive at the time, from 2021 to 2025, January 20, was not even alive. He had been executed previous to taking office. The president has frequently mentioned central casting. That's where they get all these actors. They had something like 3 or 4 different mock-ups of the White House, trying to make the public believe that he was in the real White House. But he never was. One day, it was raining like cats and dogs in Washington, D.C., and they showed him in a white, you know, looking out the windows of the White House with a bright sun shining. One day they showed 6 different people acting out being the president on the same day in different events in different parts of the U.S. Remember, evil lives on deceit. Disparaging the character of whoever they're trying to destroy, or whoever it is trying to destroy. Decoys. It tries to mock truth. No, God doesn't have ears. God doesn't have eyes. God is the quality of seeing, the quality of hearing, feeling, smell, and taste. He's the invisible, or it is the invisible. The symbol is the visible. You and me are symbols. 8.3 billion people on planet Earth are symbols. We each have our own individual characteristics that we're reflecting depending on what our concept is of truth or error. Very, very easy to reflect the fake instead of the real image and likeness of God. Genesis chapter 1, verse 26 says, "And let us make man after our image and likeness." And verse 27 says, "And so God made man in his image and likeness." Later in the Bible, it says, "There is nothing new under the sun." So, what you have to understand is what is on page 115 and 116 are the four levels of consciousness. Mathematics has 10 digits, 0 through 9. It has four operators, add, subtract, multiply, and divide. That's at the basic level. And it has a variety of levels of mathematics. Christian Science, the divine system of metaphysics, is exactly the same way. It has the seven synonymous terms for God as the basic elements instead of the 10 digits. It has four operators instead of add, subtract, multiply, and divide. They are termed the Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. If you've ever seen the movie Joshua, and it's a good one we recommend, there's certainly some inaccuracies about the Bible in there, but it basically is a good movie and it has some good messages. Joshua said, well, the Bible is the book of love. Officially, the Bible is the Word of God. And love is one of the qualities of God. Every one of those seven synonymous terms that was mentioned in this prayer treatment are backed up by hundreds of verses in the Bible. I'm talking about combined. The seven of them together are backed up by hundreds of references in the Bible. So if you looked up, and we have the links on our homepage, if you looked up the Bible verses for any one of those seven terms of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, you would find that there are a ton of Bible verses that says that's exactly what God is. But there hasn't been anyone until Mary Baker Eddy arrived on the scene about 1820s when she was born, to material sense. Just like Jesus was born in the year zero, they redid the calendar, started it at zero. So I guess more accurately would say than when Jesus appeared in visible form, or when Mary Baker Eddy appeared in visible form. So she appeared in visible form in 1820, and she left in visible form in 1910. The final edition of her textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, was just prior to her last day in visible form, which was December 10, 1910, and it was not copyrighted, as was mentioned. So anything that's published after that date probably is not going to have her picture in it, because they removed her picture the day she passed on, and they put a copyright on it. It's illegal. You can't copyright something that someone else wrote, but that's what they did, they being the bureaucracy of the church, because they are, quote, human. They're subject, they shouldn't be so easily subject to it, but they're subject to wanting to control the population of the church. Greed, control, ego, authority, all false concepts. Because there's only one ego, there's only one authority, There's only one controller, and that's God. But she was the only one that had the divine providence guiding her to give us a clear and distinct definition of God. It's all in the Bible. You're going to have to look long and hard to find a Bible scholar that equals her. There's a few of them that are her followers. Three of them had 15-minute appointments as Christian Scientists based on what they learned from Christian Science. Frederick L. Rawson is probably the number one. And I say that because he also discovered how to heal back in time. Joel Goldsmith would probably be the second. And along with him, equally, would be Wentworth Winslow. Wentworth Winslow healed a boy from the dead. Again, these are all beliefs. Not really dead. Tabitha and Lazarus weren't really dead. As Jesus himself said, they were sleeping. And he was there to awaken them from sleep. And that's what Wentworth Winslow did, awaken the boy from sleep. Mary Baker Eddy also did some raising from the dead. Calvin Fry she raised. That was her secretary. Anyway, there are millions and millions of proofs that Christian Science heals. And we give the specific instructions on how to do it. And we utilize and recommend the utilization of all five of your senses. And that includes your voice and your ears. What do I mean by your voice? And we give you the specific instructions. Effective healing. It's on the home page right now. It'll be in the menu if we take it off of the home page and put other things. It means you have to record everything you're doing in your own voice. And you have to play it back and listen to it. And learn from it. And revise it. And record it again. And every time you get a new concept about that paragraph or that key point, you do it again. You should begin at the very beginning of the textbook. Right where the title pages are. Every time you read out of the textbook, you should read those three quotes, the introductory quotes. They're very short. You can easily memorize them. Every time you read out of the textbook, or every time you think about Christian Science, you should recite them. Because that tells you the whole key. Those three quotes tell you the whole key. And think about it. Does God have ears? Could God be omnipresent, which is part of his definition? In fact, the definition of good on page 587, the same page as the second definition of God, says that good is God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. And omniscience means all intelligence, all wisdom, and all knowing. Omni. Omni-intelligence. Omni-wisdom. Omni-knowing. Omni means one, only, and all. It doesn't mean you and me. It means God. God is the only omni. It was mentioned that Frederick L. Rawson was one of the greatest Christian Science Scientist geniuses of all time, and he was the one that discovered how to heal back in time. He wrote a book, Treatment or Healing by True Prayer, and there's a chapter in there called Applied Treatment. It lists 1,315 different ailments and how to heal each one. Mary Baker Eddy says that the way to heal, we have to find the root of the problem. The root. Not the symbol of the symptom. You have to dig for the root. And once you find the root, then you have to reverse whatever the claim is of that root. How are you going to find that? It's been given to humanity on a silver platter. It's in the book on applied treatment. 1,315 items, probably everything you could imagine that could be a problem. Now that's one chapter you do not want to read from beginning to end. You should only use that as a reference to look it up if you have that problem to help you heal. It's a very big mistake to read that chapter from beginning, because then you're implanting in your thought, your consciousness, 1,315 different problems. What profession do you think has one of the shortest lifespans of any profession? I would guess it's probably an undertaker, because he focuses on death. But the second one, or maybe even lower than the undertaker, is a medical doctor. The last statistics I saw, it was something like 10 years less than the average individual, the lifespan of a doctor. Why? Because he is taking into his thought every day nothing but sickness and death and disease every day. Who do you think one of the most prolific sinners is of any profession? The pastor of a church. Everybody talks to him about their sins. If you hear all these sins, do you think you're not going to be enticed? One of the biggest problems of one of the biggest churches in the world has been caught doing the most evil things you can think of. And they're so embarrassed that what they do is they just move the one in charge of the church where they were caught to another area to give them a fresh start. Yeah. I mean, it's been all over the news for decades. Yeah. They're the worst offenders of one particular sin. In fact, two of them. They don't have any authority. Did God give authority to one person to forgive another? Why would we forgive anybody for anything? You know why? Because we've judged them and condemned them. Are you trying to forgive the President of the United States for what he's been accused of? Do you know whether he actually committed what he's accused of? Think about this. What did I say about the way evil operates? It disparages the character. It is deceitful. It has decoys. The one that was in charge of the Speaker of the House of Representatives for many decades did a video instructing the members of Congress that were in her party how to disparage the character of someone. And it was pointed directly to the President of the United States, because he dared to challenge the evildoers. He dared to challenge the people that had been running the government behind the scenes that were unelected. The corrupt bankers, the corrupt people in Wall Street, corrupt people running the Federal Reserve. Yeah, he's the first one. Well, no, he's not the first one. The one that was assassinated back in about 1963, I think it was. And then the one that was shot, but it didn't kill him, around 1980 or so. And then this one. Do we really know if he did a single one of the things he was accused of? I mean, he was accused of things that someone have to be insane to do. He's always been married to the most beautiful women in the world. And his present wife, boy, she's a killer. No one comes close to her beauty because she has it in her heart. She has a beautiful heart in the way she conducts herself, the way she thinks about people, the way she gives. She is a giver, born giver. Her parents did really an excellent job in teaching her a moral standard of giving. People usually go straying from their marriage because they are not getting what their ego is trying to seek. But what are they giving? If we think we're missing out on something, have we ever thought about what we are giving? Are we giving being a perfect husband or a perfect wife? Perfect mother? Are we doing that? Are we striving to be perfect in everything we do? People that find fault with others are typically finding the same fault in others that they themselves are doing. That's what evil does. It accuses truth of doing what it is doing. It accuses truth of doing it as a decoy. Like a magician. Look over here, because I'm going to do the trick over here, and then I'm going to tell you that it's done, or show you that it's done, so then your eyes will glance back to where the subject is. I'm going to give you a deception, so you will look at what I'm doing. That's evil. In fact, some magicians will ask the audience, are there any Christian scientists in the audience? Because they know that Christian scientists know how to protect their own consciousness, if they're good Christian scientists. And we should be. If we're not going to be a good Christian scientist, go off and do something else. Because it doesn't work when you dilute it down. God doesn't work when you dilute it down. That's why Mary Baker gave us the very specific definitions. No dancing around like all the other religions. This is what God is right here. Are you doing it? Since Jesus did not give us the details on how he performed his healings, Mary Baker Eddy was prophesied in the Bible, even by Jesus, for the very sole purpose of showing us the science of how Jesus healed. The science of it. What did Einstein say about this? He became a very student, very serious student of Mary Baker Eddy's works. He said this. He said, science without religion was lame, and religion without science was blind. Now, what do you think Christian Science is? It gives you both the science and the best religion of all time. The best religion of all kind is Christianity because it is the only one that teaches you how to heal. Can you think of a better purpose of having a religion than one that shows you how to solve any problem you're confronted with? That's why I say, with authority, which millions of others have said, Christian Science is the best religion in the world. Not that we compare it with any other religion, but it's the only one. There's three other movies that are recommended. One is called Remember the Goal. And I'm reminded of that because of what I just said. Remember the Goal. Another one is Pay It Forward. Another one is Stand and Deliver. Now, the first two don't have a word of profanity in it. The third one at the beginning has some profanity. So you have to overlook it. It's very mild profanity compared to what people say every day in their dialect today. And we, yes, are down at or below the level of Sodom and Gomorrah. Yes, every country on planet Earth is below the level of Sodom and Gomorrah. Sodom and Gomorrah were the ones that God asked. He came as a voice. He said, "Show me," and then he mentioned a number, I forget what it was, good people in Sodom and Gomorrah. They couldn't. So he lowered the number. Lowered it. Finally got down to one. Show me one person that is really acting like my image and likeness. So they were destroyed. Why do you think Noah had the flood? He needed to wipe out the civilization. And we're at that precipice again right now. Right now. Mary Baker Eddy said back in the early 1900s before she left in visible form, she said, if Christian Scientists don't do their work, they will face, everyone, the planet will face the worst dark ages of history. It will be the most intense and the longest duration of all history of civilization if Christian Scientists don't do their work. 75 years ago, we had 50 churches in the largest cities. 50. And now, if you find two or three with really serious Christian Scientists, you will have found a rare breed, a rare city. Yeah. Millions of healings since 1866. Millions and millions. And now, find one Christian Scientist and you've really found a rare bird. At the Institute here, we don't dilute anything. Anything. A good Christian Scientist doesn't feel a need to go to somebody outside of their own consciousness for healing. Chapter 18 in the textbook is entitled Fruitage. And that's the very last chapter because very strategically, if you understand the first 17 chapters, you're going to be in the position to be able to do what's in chapter 18. And that is heal anything, anytime that you're faced with it. Someone that was having a vision problem, a student of Mary Baker Eddy, sent her a letter. Back in those days, she didn't use a phone. She didn't want a phone in her house. It had already been invented. She didn't want it because then people would call and try to make an influence on the household. As a matter of fact, Wentworth Winslow says, think about being in a room. And on one side of the room, you've got a telephone. On the other side of the room, you've got a radio. Today, it'd probably be the internet. That is doing nothing but announcing the truth about God. It's tuned in to station KOG, Kingdom of God. It's only announcing the facts about God. That's it. One-way communication. No, you can't pick up a microphone and talk to anybody. And the phone is there for the purpose of nothing but trying to promote mortal mind suggestions. He said, it'll ring all the time. And every time you hear it ring, you have to take the stand that you are going to not believe anything that is unlike God to be real. And then you dismiss it. You don't even know the topic because you didn't pick up the phone if you're smart. He said, don't pick up the phone. Just deny that there can be anything unlike God that you're going to give reality to it. You see, evil doesn't have any place to be unless we give it a place. Are we going to let it use our mouth, our thoughts, our actions? Are we going to let it use someone else's by thinking that they are talking evil? Or doing evil things, or thinking evil? or are we going to be like Jesus? And we're going to see everyone as a spiritual image and likeness of God. The title says, Man, Perfect Idea of God, the Only Source of Man. Do we know someone that had birth defects? Maybe they were given a claim that they would never be able to have a sense of reason or remember things or do anything with great skill. I know someone that was born and given that claim of defects. They went to a Christian Science practitioner and they said the first thing you want, she said, first of all, you have to reverse every single thought there is about that claim. There's a lot on the internet about it, about they can't do this, that, and whatever. She said the first thing you want to do is teach them how to read as early as possible. About 2 years old, they taught her how to read. She started taking piano lessons every day. And in 3 years, she could play anything up to 3 flats and 3 sharps out of the Christian Science hymnal. Any hymn. In 3 years. But this was serious. She took lessons every day. I don't know if, I think it was, what, 2 or 3 hours it was mentioned? 2 or 3 hours a day. Every day. 7 days a week. Have you ever heard of Bruce Lee? He is by far dimensions above anyone else that has ever been involved in martial arts. Nobody could ever even hit him. They couldn't even touch him. One of the gentlemen that won the title of the world's champion on bodybuilding. You probably all know who he was. He was the governor of California from Sweden. He came here to make his fame and fortune. Married into a family of money, promoted him, became the governor of California. He was on the Johnny Carson show. He was invited at the same time Bruce Lee was invited. And here he is, I don't know, over 6 feet, nothing but muscle. And Bruce Lee is 5'7", 135 or 40 pounds. You know, like half the size of this other guy. And the other one was very egotistical. Because the smaller fellow had been in a movie called the Great Red Dragon or something like that. They wouldn't produce a movie in America. This was back about 1960. They would not produce a movie in America because he was Asia. He was from Asia. You know, now they produce movies with, in fact, there's hardly any white people in movies these days. But anyway, yeah, they wouldn't produce it. So he went to Hong Kong. He was an American citizen, but he went to Hong Kong, which is where the Chinese, well, that's a Chinese country. And they produced the movie about the dragon. And so Johnny Carson invited him so to talk about his movie. And everybody else wondered if the tricks that he did on there was real or not. He practiced every day from age 13. Every day. 7 days a week. 365 a year. Every day. And at that time, he was around 30 years old. So that's 17 years. He never missed a day of practice. He developed his own exercise routine. He knew what part of the body he wanted to build up, and he developed an exercise for that. He didn't get information from anybody. He developed it himself. His whole life was tailored by taking the best of everything and then creating additional things and adding it to it and blending it all together. That's how unique it was. No one could ever hit him. He fought people that were almost 400 pounds. He'd have them on the floor in 6 seconds. They couldn't touch him. Almost every fight he was in, it was like 10 seconds or less. And it was over. The fellow that was the muscle man that was the governor of California, he was so embarrassed. There were 77 million people. That was the biggest audience that Johnny Carson ever had. 77 million people watched it. And he was on the floor, and I think it was 6 seconds. Maybe it was less than 6 seconds. He couldn't touch Bruce. And the only reason they did that on the show is because he was threatening him as soon as he came from behind the curtain. He said, I could squash you, and he said, everything you did in that movie is a fake. You don't have any skill, and I'll prove it right here, right now. And Johnny Carson didn't know how to handle it. And finally, Bruce said, I didn't come here to fight, but if you really insist, we have to do it on the basis that nobody's going to cause an injury. The former governor of California thought, well, I will say this, but it's going to be a different story. Because he tried to kill him. He couldn't even touch him. We have it on our website. Because it's an example of someone that used qualities, and he wasn't interested in ego. He was interested in perfection of what was his interest. Intelligence was what he used in every conflict. He never had a conflict with anybody because he dissolved the conflict before it could be started. He could do it within, 5 or 10 seconds. And these people would come charging at him with their 200 or 300, almost 400 pounds. I think one guy was 380 pounds. It was John Wayne's bodyguard. And he discovered how to use the individual's weight and momentum and direction so that they were fighting themselves. He didn't fight anybody. When they would try to punch, he wouldn't be there. They would hit air, A-I-R. When they would try to grab his legs wouldn't be there. When he'd try to grab his throat wouldn't be there. When they'd try to punch him in the face, his face wouldn't be there. He made almost no movement at all. He could predict what they were going to do and when they were going to do it by studying their body movements. A guitarist that was deemed to be the fastest guitarist with the fastest hands in the world. He had a friend that had seen him perform, and he happened to be in the city where they were. And he said, you got to go and see this guy. Because Bruce had the fastest hands in martial arts. You got to see this guy. He's got the fastest hands in playing a guitar. So Bruce went to see him, and he said, you've got to arrange for me to meet with him after it's over. So he did. And their hands were the same speed. The guitarist made a challenge to Bruce Lee, and he says, okay, I want you to, I think they were tapping on a table or something. I want you to tap as fast as you can, and I'm going to do the same thing. They were facing each other. And they both had eyes that were fast enough they could count theirs and each other's. And believe it or not, when they started and when they finished, when they stopped, they were all totally synchronized because they started at the same moment and they had the same capability of speed, and so the taps on the surface of the table were synchronized. They both did whatever they could to bring it to the total perfection. And of course, you know, a guitarist moves his fingers very fast and very accurately. No matter what our interest is, we need to be striving for perfection, and we need to see the perfection in not only ourselves, but in everyone else. Everyone else. Remember, someone that was given the prognosis that they'd never be able to remember, and she could play from memory. We don't want to limit anyone about anything. That same individual was an expert at gymnastics, riding a bicycle, swam like a fish. She'd remember anything. She studied Christian Science every single day. She would get up on the Wednesday evening meetings and give an extemporaneous testimony that would be very complex. What do I mean by that? The scientific statement of being is as follows. There's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material, he is spiritual. She got up and gave a testimony one time, and she used that prayer. That's on page 468 of the textbook, Scientific Statement of Being. And she gave a testimony about having a healing from using that prayer. And she substituted the words. Every time it talked about matter, she substituted the name of the problem that she had. And every time it talked about man, she changed it to say, I. In other words, at the end, she said, I am the image and likeness of God. And you know, these are scattered throughout many places in that prayer. She would stand up and just talk in a normal speed. And she would automatically replace those words. And I was told that there was no rehearsing. And her parents didn't have any idea that she was going to stand up and give a testimony. In fact, they didn't even know she had the problem. She handled it all quietly, on her own. And then Wednesday evening rolled around, she gave the testimony about it. And she was given a prognosis. She could never remember anything. Could never have a normal life. And people would talk with her like she was like anyone else. They would never know she ever had a problem. And that particular problem that she was labeled with, they had a certain way the people looked. You know, their face had a different bone structure. Her bone structure was transformed to a normal bone structure. The whole bone structure of her head came into alignment with total normalcy. There is no limit if you're going to try to emulate God, emulate Christ Jesus, emulate Mary Baker Eddy, emulate these other professionals. These three that I mentioned, they had 15-minute appointments. Joel Goldsmith and Frederick L. Rousen, Wentworth Winslow, 15-minute appointments. That was it. They had to limit it to 15 minutes. And when they did, the healing was done. The healing was complete. Imagine going to a medical doctor. I've never been to one, so I can't tell you. But they certainly are in movies from time to time. I generally turn the movie off when it talks about medical problems. But I know enough about them that nobody goes in there expecting to be healed in 15 minutes and leave. Imagine. You see, that's what's possible by following what Jesus did and knowing how to do it, thanks to Mary Baker Eddy and these other experts. that have written books. We have it all on the website. Every tool you need is on the website. And what you have to remember above everything is the way Frederick L. Rawson begins his prayer when he wants to overcome the belief of time and go back in time and heal the problem when it was first discovered to be a problem. And that is, he starts by first of all denying the problem. After about 1 minute takes to do that, or less. And then he goes immediately to God, and he says, there is nothing impossible with God. That's where he begins, and that's what we have to do. That's an excellent way to pray. The first thing you say is, there's nothing impossible. So it doesn't matter what it is that you've just denied, that it has no truth in it, to say, yes, everything is possible. And one very memorable healing that he did, he was looking out of the window. This was back around 1920, 100 years ago. Pardon me, 100 years ago. And Mr. Spaulding, and I mention his name because he's on the website as an author, and these other names were mentioned because they're authors listed on the website, and you got to know their name to look them up. Otherwise, we really try to keep personality out of everything we say. We don't mention names. We intentionally don't mention names. Titles? Yeah, we have to give them some identity so you can relate to what we're saying. But we don't want to condemn. All these people have condemned the President of the United States, and they don't even know. And it's been later proven that what they were accusing him of, it didn't exist. So anyway, he had come over to the U.S. He's from the U.K. In fact, the way he found out about Christian Science is that one of the biggest newspapers in London, because he had a worldwide reputation for being an electrician, electrical consultant for companies all over the world. And back in those days, 1920, there was no international, flights for passengers. And so they had to travel any way they could to get to him. If they were in America, they had to travel whatever time it took to get over there and so forth. So the biggest companies in the world that couldn't solve their problems, they would go to him if it had to do with electricity. Because he had a reputation that he solved every problem that ever he consulted on. So, they also knew that he was an avid Bible student. He's an example that he took everything that he did to the maximum perfection. He was a great sportsman. Everything he did was perfect. He was in a shooting contest with rifles, and they gave him a rifle that he had never had in his hand, and he demonstrated perfection, looking away from the target with his eyes closed and pulled the trigger. And he didn't do it until he had already gone through his consciousness of being in alignment with God, knowing the kinds of things we're talking about here. That God is the creator, and we are the image and likeness, and we cannot do anything to miss the mark. That's what sin is. Sin is missing the mark. It really came from an archery example of archers who would miss the bullseye, and they called that a sin, missing the mark. So anyway, he got his thought totally in line with, in harmony with God. And then he pulled the trigger, still his eyes closed and his head away. And he won the contest. They do this many times to see how many gets the bullseyes, and he got a bullseye every time. So they were standing there around 1920 or so in the U.S. looking out the window. I don't know whether it mentions the city they were in, but it would have probably been on the East Coast, because there wasn't that much travel to the West Coast at that early date, although they had put the train in long before that. But anyway, they were looking out the window, and there were very few motorized vehicles and even fewer motorized trucks, especially for carrying, you know, large trucks to carry large weights. So this guy had a whole cart full, a wooden cart full of rocks, and he had an animal that was pulling it, and he felt uneasy about something, so he stopped and got out and went back to look at his tailgate. And while he was back there, something alarmed the animal, and he raised up and dumped a whole load of rocks on the driver. And Frederick L. Rawson and his friend, Mr. Spalding, they observed this. They were looking out the window, I don't know, probably just enjoying the view and talking CS. I don't believe it says in the testimony. We have this on the website. And he said one thing, these few words, instantly he said it. There is nothing but God. Five words. There is nothing but God. He had such a clear understanding of that, that it carried through with anything else that was in his atmosphere, including that accident. Immediately, the man came rocketing out from under the pile of rocks. He could have been dead for all we know. He came rocketing out. He didn't have a scratch on him. Imagine having all those rocks fall on you and then coming out probably with rocks rubbing against his face as he was shooting out of there. Not a scratch. Not a scratch. Mr. Spalding is the one that recorded the testimony because Mr. Rawson would have been too humble himself to have done it. That's what is possible when you know, when you repeat and embed in your thought that there is nothing impossible with God. It doesn't matter what an individual may have been born with a claim that says that they are not capable of this, this, or the other, and they're going to look different than everybody else because of the bone structure, and that's how doctors put the claim on them. They look at them because they've been trained to do this. They say, well, they tell the parents, well, I'm sorry, but your new child has been born with this problem, and they're never going to be able to be normal. They're never going to be able to do this, that, or whatever. Can you imagine a doctor putting that kind of a limitation on somebody as soon as they're born? I mean, that must make them feel really terrible. How could anyone with conscience outline the life of an individual based on hearsay? I mean, it's not based on fact. This family proved that it wasn't fact. Yes, it had that look in the, with their bone structure, their head, and their face. But it was all fixed. It was all transformed. Because they had been Christian Scientists their whole life, even though they were a young couple, or at least one of them had. Both of them were in Christian Science at that time. And they just weren't willing to accept it. They weren't willing to accept it. And they did the extraordinary. Not weekly piano lessons, daily. And not for just the typical half hour or hour. It was 2 or 3 hours a day. And as soon as that they could put her in the water, they had her learn how to swim. She loved it. She swam like a fish. She loved activity, so she loved acrobatics. We are criminal if we accept anything less than perfection about anyone. If you're not well enough developed in your understanding, and you see someone that is really in extreme need, and you're not ready to go up to them and take that first step to see if you can help them in some way, then don't look at them. Don't do anything. Get your thought on what God is, what man is. On page 591, it says, man is the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full expression of mind. Now, there's a lot more in the chapter on recapitulation, chapter 14, about what man is. But in the glossary, she just has that short definition. But that's enough. In fact, the whole textbook is about what God is and what man is. But those definitions are so that that we all have something concrete to work with. And be sure to look up every single key word, even if you think that you've known it since you were 3 years old. I haven't found a single person that I have asked what the meaning is of hearing that knew. Not a single one. We all think we know what it is to hear. I would look up every single word of those 500 words or so that she uses, she being Mary Baker Eddy, to give you the description of what the seven synonymous terms are. And the work's already been done. The founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute is William and Helen Wright. And the husband, William, he had another profession, but Helen made this her profession, Christian Science, and this institute which she founded. That was her profession. She traveled wherever she could around the world to meet with anybody giving a special class on Christian Science. She traveled to Europe several times. She'd just leave a note on the kitchen table to her husband. Honey, I went to wherever it was, England or wherever. And I'll be in touch as soon as I arrive and let you know how things are. But they didn't have any children at that time. And so she was free to go. She was a prolific writer. In fact, she was a ghostwriter for one of the most popular writers of Christian Science books. She wrote a whole library of Christian Science. She was the one that wrote most of them. Finally, she came to the conclusion, well, why am I writing under his name? I'm going to just break away and I'm going to write my own book. That way I will have total control of what I write instead of just writing books for him. Transformation. You have to use all of your senses. All five of them. Think about an investment. It sounds really good. In fact, it may sound too good to be true. If it does, it probably is. In other words, it doesn't smell right. You have an intuition about it. It doesn't smell right. Everything has to pass the test of all five senses. All five. If you study Christian Science and you don't record, you are missing the lion's share. If you don't read, you only listen, but you don't see the words, again, you're missing a major part of it. I know people don't read. In fact, they don't even teach you how to read in school these days. They don't teach you mathematics. That's what evil does. They try to take away the basics. They don't want you to be married. They don't want you to have a family. Having a sensual relationship with somebody that you just met is no problem. That's the moral standard of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's where we are. When the church that was founded by Mary Baker Eddy takes her picture out of the book the day she passes on and then republishes the book without her picture in it, and then they change things in the book and copyright it, you know you're in trouble. Took 75 years I think the peak was about 40 or 50. But it has gone from having 50 churches to having two or three in big cities. Two or three. And it's commonly accepted to get whatever solution you want for any problem. There's very little dedication to depending on the truth to heal you. They take the easy way out. And if you don't make Christian Science a way of life, even if you happen to be lucky enough to find a practitioner that performs the healing, and there's very few of those around, but even if you did, if you let it go at that, you're going to continue to have problems in your life unless you take up the serious study of Christian Science. Because what someone else does doesn't solve your problem. It's only like a Band-Aid. It takes care of the problem at the moment. Tomorrow or next week or next year, 5 years from now, you're going to have other problems. Because you're not living the life which was the foundation of why you were healed. Wentworth Winslow, one of the three that had 15-minute appointments. And this is back before they had international telephone. I don't know, probably 1920 or... He received a telegram. Had three words. 6 treatments, please. That was it. He knew that it was from South America. He was in New York. In fact, Wentworth Winslow was an example of the story in the Bible about the son that instead of following the good character, he went off and went wild, doing every sensual activity he could be involved. That's what Wentworth Winslow did. He had an excellent family. He was from Canada. They had a good name. They had connections with a lot of big companies, the presidents. Their family gave him introductory letters after he graduated from college and expected him to go and get a good job and, you know, build up a good company, maybe from scratch, whatever. And instead, he went the wayward way. He was another prodigal son. Finally got to the point that he was given the prognosis that he couldn't, his life was over. And he was a young man. But he did the prodigal son trip. And this was the result of it. Prognosis that he wouldn't be living. He had a friend that contacted him. I think it was a friend. And told him about Christian Science. He didn't have any choice. He went to the finest doctors, who happened to be in New York. You know, people went back and forth across the Canadian border all the time. And New York was really the hub, because that's the area where the Pilgrims landed, Massachusetts, and they infiltrated the whole East Coast there, New York and New Jersey and so forth, Massachusetts. He went to the finest doctors in New York, 3 or 4 different ones. They all said the same thing. So he had no medical solution. In fact, a lot of the early people that came to Christian Science came to Christian Science because the medical profession had no recommendation for him, no solution. They just said that you're going to pass on. So he said, what have I got to lose? Medicine can't solve my problem. And of course, that last chapter in Science and Health, there's several people there that said the same thing. They had no other alternative. So he tried it. And he was healed by a practitioner. It made such an impact on his consciousness that he made the decision right then that he was going to devote his life to Christian Science. And boy, he did with that exactly what he did with his studies in school. Perfect. Really serious. So he got this test, he got this telegram about 6 treatments, please. Now, Mary Baker Eddy says that we should find out what the root of the problem is and reverse it and state the positive thing that is the absolutely opposite of what the claim is. And this is all explained in Wentworth Winslow's writings and also Frederick L. Rawson's. The only thing he could think of to do was to examine everything he was doing in his life and make sure that it was his highest understanding of pure living, purity in his thinking, in his speech, and in his actions. And he had learned that, you know, whatever we are doing with our thought, speech, and action, that it floats out into the universe of thought. So he was convinced that it would float down to South America, that they were receptive, whoever it was that sent him this telegram was receptive to having Christian Science be the tool to bring about the healing. He had no idea what the problem was, or how long it had been a problem, or anything else. And of course, these are all details that really don't matter. But normally a healing is quicker if you know what the claim is, so you can deny the specific claim can be real. Just like the things that have been discussed in his prayer tree. So, he went to work monitoring his every thought, speech, and action. And after a few days, he got another telegram. 6 more treatments, please. So it had 4 words instead of 3. 6 more treatments, please. So he continued. And then after a few days, he got another telegram. The guy introduced himself. And he said, this is my friend that had a problem. And the problem is called insanity. And the first 6 treatments healed the problem. But the people around him couldn't believe he was healed. So they were still attaching the problem to him even though he was healed. They wouldn't change their thinking about it. So the second 6 treatments were to make sure that anyone that was judging him, that they would recognize the healing was complete. That's it. Purity in one's own thought, speech, and action. And that's what Jesus used. The purity of Jesus is what healed his people. He doesn't say it, but that's what it was. Because he said very few words. His parables are a different story. We have a whole series of books. I think it's in 16 volumes or something. I think four volumes to a binding. On the 41 parables. He says the parables in one or two sentences. Usually. And the people that give their spiritual interpretation from a Christian Science viewpoint on how to solve the, you know, how to solve the parable, see the spiritual dimension in it and everything. They wrote pages, several pages, on 1 or 2 sentences that Jesus would say. Stamp, like a postage stamp, and Moss, M-A-A-S. They're the authors. So you can find them in our menu under the authors. Wonderful thing to study. You'll be amazed at what spiritual unfoldment came to those authors. Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. That's the key. We have to be ready to want something better than what we have. We want to become, we have to have a desire to be independent of everyone else. Mary Baker Eddy does not advise people to study together as a group. And her students that lived in her home, they never went to church. She looked upon church as a very temporary institution to merely introduce people to Christian Science and to give them an opportunity to hear the testimonies of people from their own community who had been healed. And her thought after that was, you don't have a need for the church. Because your development is not from what other people say. It's not from being in meetings with other people. We have the definition of church in the header. That means it's on every page of the website. Well, some websites, they change the, you know, the header based on what the page is. But ours is the same throughout the whole website. And we give you the six main points from the definition of church. And it's from page 583 in the glossary. Church. 1. The structure of truth and love. 2. It rests on divine principle. 3. It proves its utility. 4. It elevates the race. And that elevation is from material to spiritual. 5. It casts out devils. 6. It heals the sick. And what is sick? A sick is anything, it's like a disease, anything unlike God. It covers everything. Sin, sickness, disease, and death. That is the purpose of a church. The Mary Baker Eddy Institute is a church because that's exactly what our motives are, to do exactly what it says in this six-point definition. That's another thing you will find extremely important in your study, and that is that you make an itemized, numbered list from every key point. So it's recommended that when you read something, you read it in the original text and record it that way, and then you think about it, you contemplate it, and when you get something kind of gelled in your mind about what it's about, then you go back and organize it in a numbered list, or you might want to organize it in a number list first, and then study the organized list. That's what I do. I never study it in prose format of a paragraph. Everything I'm really interested in, I automatically put it in a numbered list. Every time. Every time. That's the way I live. With a numbered list. Everything's a numbered list. What are the key points? Forget all the ifs, ands, and buts. Just, you know, get the key point. And if you're searching for key points, you will find that your reading is much faster, because what you're doing is you're doing the work on what the reading is teaching you. And that's what you spend your time on instead of reading. You spend your time on learning and memorizing, because you're seeing just the meat of it if you focus on the key points. If you follow our system, you will be focusing on the 17 books from Mary Baker Eddy, the textbook, and the 16 other books. And you'll be focusing on the book that is entitled Your Divinity Revealed by the founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Because in it, chapter 4 is on just the synonymous term of mind. Chapter 5 is on spirit. Chapter 6 is on soul, and so forth, up through chapter 10, which is on love. It's the seven synonymous terms. And you will study that book from beginning to end, and you will study the textbook from beginning to end, and you'll study each of the other 16 books from Mary Baker Eddy. Some of them are very small, 15 or 20 pages. but they are complete titles in and of themselves. And if you spend your life always studying at least two books, one of Mary Baker Eddy's, well, really three, the textbook, always be reading it every day, studying it, recording it, repeating the recording, and so forth, and then one of her other 16 books, and then when you get done with that, go to the next one of the 16 books, and the next one, and the next one, but always be studying the textbook, and always be studying the book by the founder, Your Divinity Revealed, because those seven chapters will teach you what you need to know about the seven synonymous terms. And everything is from the textbook that is in that book. Everything is from the textbook that is in the Divinity Revealed book. And those seven chapters are critical. And there's also a chapter on the four operators, Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. The levels are not covered in there. They are covered in the textbook, pages 115 and 116. Very important for you to understand. There's three levels of mortal mind, first, second, and third degree. The first degree is depravity. The second one is moral. And the third one is spiritual. And then the other level is immortal mind, and that is about God, idea, and man. Man, as discussed in Genesis chapter 1, which means the image and likeness of God. Here are some other choice quotations from Einstein. First of all, let me tell you how he got involved in Christian Science. He had heard about it, but he didn't really give it much thought because he had spent his life studying and developing his thoughts on physics, which is what? Matter. So for Christian Science to tell him that there's no life, truth, and intelligence or substance in matter, which is what he devoted his life to exploring, he really had a huge block in his thought about giving it serious consideration. This is before he ever read the textbook. He had prejudged it. But then what happened? He had a friend named Underwood. He was a PhD in physics. And he had been assigned to the Atomic Energy Commission, his friend, Dr. Underwood. And this was around World War II time. And they were doing it to try to, you know, destroy civilization. Not us, but directed at other countries that were in the war. And, of course, the main one was Japan. I mean, you can't blame World War II on Japan. It was our own government that is responsible for World War II. You know who the president was. Was involved in the Great Depression. Well, everyone on the Atomic Energy Commission passed on as a result of radiation, except for his friend. And when Einstein inquired with his friend about how did he survive when everyone else was gone, he said, Christian Science. That shocked Einstein, because he had great respect for his friend. He was on a level with Einstein, with his knowledge of physics. So then he took a serious interest in studying it. And he removed the block from his mind and said, okay, I'm searching for the truth. As a matter of fact, one of the quotations that we have on our website, among many from Einstein, is his thoughts about curiosity. He said, curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. Never. In other words, the first quote at the beginning from Jesus, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Einstein was always searching for the truth, but he expected it to be in matter. He expected it to be in understanding more about matter. When it's the opposite, the truth is coming from spirit, because that's the only real substance. So after studying it, and he attended a local church there, and he went into the reading room, which, you know, the bigger churches, all the churches are supposed to have a reading room, but the bigger ones have them in the metropolitan areas where the big traffic is of the business people. And he went into the reading room, and he studied, so he would be in solitude when he studied. Maybe he didn't want his friends to see that he was studying the book. I don't know. But anyway, he went there to study. And when he finally felt like he had an inkling of an understanding about the book, he said, "Imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago." So that would have been around 1946, because she discovered it in 1866. So that'd be exactly 40 years. And we know that his friend Underwood was working on this Atomic Energy Commission before they created the atom bomb to drop it on Japan. We aggravated Japan long before they came to Hawaii. So, first of all, he was amazed that it was a woman, because a woman could not vote. They could not hold title to property. They were considered a second-class citizen. I mean, in the time of Jesus, when he was preaching to the people on the hillside, they gave the numbers on how many men were there. And then it said, plus women and children. One group was 4,000, another was 5,000. So out of the 9,000 people, multiply that by about 5 or 6. So you could have had anywhere from 45 to 60 or more thousand people. And how many showed up at the trial? It was already mentioned. None. Half a dozen showed up at the crucifixion. His mother, Mary Magdalene, who had been healed of a past of ill repute. Martha didn't come. That was Mary's sister. Lazarus didn't come. That was Mary's brother. Lazarus was raised from the dead, and he didn't even come. And only one disciple, John, out of the 12. So you think Jesus was a failure in choosing his staff, his disciples? Yeah, he was. And you know what the problem is? That they're all human. I don't know whether the President of the United States is guilty for anything that he was accused of by the opposing political party. But I know that it's not my business. And if anything that evil has come to the surface, whether it's true or false, about anyone, we should immediately convert our thought to what God is and what is man and focus on that. Don't focus on trying to decide whether you should judge someone and then condemn them, and then you got to forgive them when you realize that they're innocent. You know, you don't have any authority to forgive anybody for anything. If we want to be judging or condemning, we better be looking in the mirror. And if we are condemning ourselves about something, that should be an encouragement to improve our life. Because we are forgiven for anything we've done only when we change our character. And if we've done something against someone else, we should always try to make restitution. Always. Don't just say, well, that was an evil nature and I have no control over it, and just forgive yourself for it. That's not the solution. That's not the solution at all. You have to make restitution to the best possible. And if you can't figure out how to do it, then utilize your study of Christian Science to in that direction, to figure out how to solve every problem that you've caused someone else. Everyone. You need to have as clean a record as possible going forward. There's nothing impossible to God. God is perfect. Man is perfect as God's image. I'm not talking about a mortal man, not a visible person walking around. We all have a closet full of problems that we have committed, you know, made mistakes. If we had a chance to live our life over, we would do it different. We wouldn't make that same mistake. But we can't dwell on that. We got to solve the ones that we can solve that have affected negatively someone else and continue working on a way to solve it if we don't have an easy way. Always do that. Self-improvement includes that. Dr. Francis Fluno, F like Frank, L-U-N-O. Highly recommend you read his page and a half long letter about criticism. Because that's the first thing we have to do. Living a life of giving goes along with not criticizing anyone for anything, under any circumstances, anytime, anywhere. The whole who, what, why, where, when, and how. The whole thing has to apply to not criticize anyone for anything. Now, if we have children, we have to remember what Mary Baker Eddy said, that love makes strong demands, or we should make strong demands on love. In other words, it requires discipline. We don't let a child run across the street before he understands how to do it safely. We might have to hold his hand snugly, firmly, so he can't get away and do it. We have to use wisdom. If we're not using wisdom in what we do, we're not letting mind be our guide. Remember, omniscience is omni-wisdom, omni-knowing, and omni-intelligence. We're not being an image and likeness of God if we ignore any single one of the seven synonymous terms or any of the 400 or 500 words which help define those terms. We have all the information on the website that you need. Every word that defines God has been underlined by the founder of the American Mary Baker Eddy Institute and put into seven different volumes, one volume for each of the seven terms, that shows every page with the words underlined. So if you want to study just mind, you can study that volume and read every place in the book where mind has been used to define God. It's important to understand the capitalization. If a word is capitalized, and you have to be careful if it's the first word of the sentence, because it may or may not be the big or the little M. But every word that is capitalized by Mary Baker Eddy, unless it's a title or something like that, or the first word of the sentence, is automatically telling you that it is God. She invented that for the sole purpose of communicating to the world what was really God and what was not. Whether it was God's image and likeness that is being discussed out of Genesis chapter 1, or it is the Adam and Eve image of man, which is a human that is a sinning mortal man. It's a sin to not follow God. If you have any thought, speech, or action that is unlike God, you are sinning. Jesus said that what you think is the same as what you do. So you're sinning if you think wrongly about anyone, about anything, anytime, anywhere, under any circumstance. That's a sin. So you're a sinner. We are all sinners. We all have a closet full of sins that we have done, whether it's in thinking, talking, or acting, or all three, or any two of the three. We all have a closet. Some of us have a big closet, like me. I mean, I've gone back and looked at my life, and I've thought, wow, I was raised in Christian Science. There's just no excuse for what I did. I mean, I was very enthusiastic. I raced cars, and I raced motorcycles. on the street, on the highway. That's a sin. It's breaking the law. Mary Baker Eddy says we should not break any civil law. And if we think that it's wrong, then we should do our effort to get it changed. But don't break it. And I broke them all the time. Fortunately, I had no more than a half a dozen tickets my whole life, even though I was driving as much as 200 miles an hour with both motorcycles and cars out on the open road. I did it safely. I didn't go 200 miles an hour around someone that was traveling 60. You know, you have to use your intelligence. And basically, I did it when there was no one in sight. I just enjoyed high speed. We all have our little things we like to do. And if it's not within the law, even though it doesn't hurt anybody, it is a sin. Because we shouldn't be breaking what is a law that is supposed to be controlling humans. So we've all done things that are wrong. And whether or not someone else did something as wrong, whether they're accused of it or not, is not our business. Mary Baker Eddy says that we will keep plenty busy focusing on doing things correctly without worrying about whether someone else did it or not. Mary Baker Eddy devoted time every hour of the day to make sure that her thoughts, speech, and actions were abiding by the golden rule. Every hour. And she probably slept no more than 4 hours. She could have never gotten done what she did. She wasn't any 8-hour a night sleeper, I can tell you that. And most of us will sleep much less. I've always slept very little. But most of us will sleep less as we are studying Christian Science, because we will find that the time of sleep is not productive time. And we'll want to get more done. So you'll find it will be natural for you to have less repose when you're studying and striving to advance in the long road, the infinite road of infinite progression. Infinite progression is concrete being, Mary Baker Eddy tells us. If you take even a couple minutes every hour of the day that you are awake and devote it to what Mary Baker Eddy did, making sure that you are following the golden rule, making sure that you're only thinking good and talking good and doing good about everything and everyone that you have any relationship with or know about. And you can just include all of humanity. You know, not just individual, but collective and universal in your prayer. You see, prayer is not praying to God. Praying is getting ourselves in alignment with the laws of God that were established ever since there has been any existence of anything. There was never any creation. Remember, the Bible says there's nothing new under the sun. And also, remember what Habakkuk says, God is of purer eyes than to behold evil. To even behold it. Jesus did not behold it. Well, he recognized it. He overthrew the tables of the money changers. He didn't overthrow the people. He overthrew the evil. We have to make sure we separate the evil from the evildoer. Work to expose and destroy the evil, not the person. Evil can just find someone else that will promote it. So getting rid of an evil person doesn't get rid of the evil. So why waste your time? Why clutter up your consciousness with someone else's problem? Why build up a judgment and condemning, because you only have to forgive anyway? You know, the old adage, what goes around comes around. Mary Baker Eddy, to her most advanced class, which was in 1898, she hand-selected everyone in her metaphysical college. She was the only one in the world, well, in the United States, and there wouldn't have been in any other country because we were the only country that was most likely free. Even it wasn't totally free ever. But she got a license to have a metaphysical college, and she could certify people up through PhD degree, which is what she did. Well, it was really CSD degree, Doctorate of Christian Science. And so her last class, and these were the people working on their doctorate. And they all earned a CSD degree if they graduated this class. And that was 1898. And she hand-selected each one. You couldn't just apply. She chose them. And everybody that was in that class, on the third day, she sent them out at the end of the class and said, when you come back for tomorrow's class, you need to report a healing that you had in the last 24 hours, maybe 12 hours, 14 hours. And they all did. Every single one in the class. That's how advanced they were. They'd all had healings before, but, you know, to have them instantaneous, that was a new challenge. To that class, she gave seven special prayers called Diapason of Heaven. Diapason, if you look it up, and we highly recommend the Noah Webster 1828 Dictionary as your first go-to source, because he quotes many, many Bible verses. In fact, he did a complete translation of the Bible. And we recommend that one because of what I just mentioned. So, go there first, but in there, if you look up Diapason, it is Compound Concord. Now, the city Mary Baker Eddy lived in, she grew up in, was Concord, New Hampshire, and she went back to Concord, New Hampshire after she moved out of Boston, which is where she started Christian Science and the church and everything. And she moved back there and spent 16 years there before she went to Boston again to set up the monitor. And she set up the monitor for the very same reason that we have a problem with our mainstream media. They were all corrupt. They focused on centralizing everything. Sensual. Emotion. And lies. They would fabricate lies. Something like 80 or 90% of everything they say about our president is a lie. Proven to be lies. But they feel it's their duty. It's their duty because they're trying to survive, because they want to continue getting their bribes and everything. But most of them are now clones and actors. So it's not as bad as you think. Only because the time is not quite right to expose everyone. They're exposed a little at a time and have been for the last several years. And there's a website that whatever has publicly been approved to expose is done through that website. It's on our website. We've talked about it. The information is there. By the way, if you ever have any questions about Christian Science or the system of divine metaphysics or the Bible or any of Mary Baker Eddy's writings, contact us. Go to the contact page. The button is at the bottom in the footer and also in the menu, in the bottom area of the menu. Just scroll down to the bottom and it'll be one of the last one or two or three that are listed. And all the information on how to contact us is right there. We don't do long emails or any of that kind of stuff, but we do have direct, we do emails when that's appropriate, but we have a special system that we recommend use, and it's all outlined there on the contact page. So, this particular prayer treatment is about man and perfection And perfection means love. Because love means that you have nurtured all of the other qualities of God and brought them to fulfillment. That's what love is. Like a mother nurturing a child, bringing it to fulfillment, protecting it, nurturing it, teaching it, giving it the needed discipline, lovingly. So because this focuses on perfection, I'm going to read to you the Diapason of Heaven with a focus on love. And then I will say amen. And if there's any thought that comes to me while I'm reciting that, which does happen occasionally, then I will give that to you after I say amen. And then I'll give you the date and the time of this recording. And that may not agree with the title, because the date and time in the title will be when it's posted on the website, or when it is when the software is used to, you know, take out anything that needs to be taken out in the way of extraneous noise or that kind of thing. No content has changed. These are extemporaneous, and we don't edit any of them. Whatever comes out is what you hear. And hopefully it's all the right stuff. Because I don't do any editing. And you, if there's any blatant error, you'll be able to recognize it and make the correction yourself. That's not really a problem. So, here is the Diapason of Heaven with a focus on love by Mary Baker Eddy. And that is from 1898. Declare often, love is my God, and my God is love. Good is my God, and my good is love. Love is my God, and my love is good. Love is my principle, and my principle is love. Love is the law of my being. Divine love is enthroned in my consciousness as my God. This is the word of God. Amen. A thought did occur to me, and that is the importance of being systematic and consistent, organized, and prioritized in every part of your life, and making sure that whatever you're thinking, saying, or doing is in accordance with the golden rule. It is Saturday, March 21, 2026, presently 1325. Thank you for listening to this extemporaneous prayer treatment on the topic of man, perfect idea of God, the only source of man. The end.